want to continue on exhorting you not to waste your lives this morning. And I was thinking, I wanted to make one point that I did not make last time, and I just wanted to briefly mention this one this time. When I was talking about reasons for missing church, and I didn't really talk about the work issue, about missing church for work. And you know, what I would recommend is sometimes people do have jobs where they are required to miss church for work, and I would say if that happens excessively, you should look for another job, if at all possible. And I was fortunate before I got into the ministry that I worked Monday through Friday, which was a good thing. But occasionally we would have to work on weekends or something if there was a big project or something. Sometimes it would be taken out of the state for work, and that's pretty much impossible not to miss church in that instance, unless you just want to be fired or something. So in that case, I would, you know, once in a while I'd miss church. But if possible, I would make it back. One time I was, once again, just giving you my example, but I was in a plant down in North Carolina over the weekend, and the flight was supposed to be on Saturday evening, and then it kept getting delayed and delayed. The project kept getting delayed, and I kept having to change my flight, and I finally had to change my flight for Sunday morning, and I was in the plant until 1:30 in the morning. And then I drove almost 2 hours straight back to the airport, hopped on the red-eye flight, flew to Cincinnati, and left the airport and went straight to church to be in church because I wanted to be in church. But there were other times when we'd have to work in the office, and they'd want people to work weekends. And at least when you first start, you know, you just don't tell them, I'm not going to do it. It's always better to ask first and then tell them later if you have to. But I would just, if it came down to it, I was in a pharmaceutical plant one time, and I just kindly asked, I said, is it possible, could I come in at 6 o'clock on Sunday, leave at 9 o'clock, come back at noon? And they said, that's okay. And I came in my church clothes and went to the plant. Now, what do you suppose, what did that speak to those people at that plant? Wow, this guy's serious about his religion, right? He really doesn't want to miss church. And they were nice about it. So anyway, I would just recommend, it's, you know, as they say, a soft answer turneth away wrath. So if possible, talk to an employer about it, and if they get obstinate about it, you could always look for another job or something. But anyway, I want to get into the next way a person can waste their lives, and that would be by trying to acquire excessive wealth. In this day and age, with the Great Recession/Depression going on, probably most people are just trying to get by and survive, not really get rich, but that is something that is a temptation for all of us. And some people out there do have grandiose ideas about really, you know, wishing and desiring and dreaming about being rich. But Jesus taught in Luke chapter 12 and verse 15 that possessions are not the end all of life. He said in Luke 12 and verse 15, it says, "And he said unto them, take heed and beware of covetousness, for a man's life consisteth not in the abundance of the things which he possesseth." A man's life consisteth not in the abundance of the things which he possesseth. That is not the summum bonum of our lives, is the things that we can acquire in our lives. Now God, we are told in the scripture, gives us all things richly to enjoy. There's nothing wrong with having material things in life. But if that is the main purpose in your life, in your main goal and desire, you've got a problem. He says there, take heed and beware of covetousness. So the person who thinks that his life consists of all the things that he owns or that he can get is a covetous person, and that is breaking the 10th commandment of the 10 commandments, as we know. The thing is, heaping up riches, as we're told in Psalm 39 in verse 6, is vain. And if you think about it, even if you're an atheist or if you're a Christian, either one, is not heaping up riches in this life vain? If you're a Christian, you're going to go where you have a mansion prepared for you in heaven, which is going to dwarf anything you had down here, and it's not going to matter anyway. And if you're an atheist, so you think, you're going to go to the ground, and you're going to cease to exist, and none of your glory is going to descend after you anyway. In reality, you're going to end up in hell, and then it's not going to do you any good there either. But it is vain either way you slice. It doesn't matter who you are and what your metaphysical ideas are. It's vain. Psalm 39 and verse 6. It says, "Surely every man walketh in a vain show, Surely they are disquieted in vain. He heapeth up riches and knoweth not who shall gather them. And that's part of the vain part of it. And I'll get into that in just a second. We heap up riches and possessions, and then we don't even know who's going to end up with them after we go. And chances are, the guy that ends up with them is going to be a fool anyway, and he's going to blow all the things that you worked really hard for, or he's just not going to appreciate them, one of the two. And my dad piles up antiques, and he loves all this kind of stuff. And I kind of feel bad for him, because someday when he's gone, I don't want any of that stuff. What am I going to do with it? It doesn't mean anything to me. It means a lot to him. It's special to him, but it's not special to me. So, I mean, that's part of the vanity of it. You get all this wealth, you get all these things, and then the guy that you give it to either doesn't want it or just squanders it and blows it, one of the two. We're taught in 1 Timothy 6 and verse 7, getting back to the earlier point, is that we can't take it with us. 1 Timothy 6 and verse 7. This is an age-old maxim. I mean, we've all heard this forever, and it's as true now as the first time you heard it. 1 Timothy 6 and verse 7, Paul says, "For we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out." When Steve Jobs died here a few years ago, he took with him the exact same amount of stuff that every one of you and myself are going to take with us. Nothing. It didn't matter that he'd amassed, what, $50 billion or something like that. This incredible fortune, incredible company. None of it mattered. He died just like everybody else. He died just like a beast. You can't take it with you. And like I said, leaving it to others is vain. Look in Psalm 49, verses 10 through 11. Psalm 49, verses 10 through 11. 10 through 12, pardon me. You leave it to others, you're taking a gamble. Now, of course, there are people out there that want to solve that problem for you. They want to make it illegal to leave your stuff to others. That was one of the pillars of the Communist Manifesto, Karl Marx's book. No inheritance left to any other people. 100% inheritance tax. And there are lots of politicians and other crazy people out there that want to do that. They don't want you to be able to leave any of your wealth to your posterity. They don't want family fortunes being passed down. They want equality and egalitarianism, supposedly. They don't really want equality. They want the rest of us at equal down here with nothing, and then they want the rulers to be up at the top. That's what they really want, though they won't tell you that. But the history of communism proves it, if you're familiar with any of the Soviet Union experiments or anything. Psalm 49, anyway. Psalm 49, 10 through 12. It says, "For he seeth that wise men die, likewise the fool and the brutish person, and leave their wealth to others. Their inward thought is that their houses shall continue forever, and their dwelling places to all generations. They call their lands after their own names." You see, they think that all their stuff is going to last forever. It's going to be in the family forever, and they're going to have this great big name, like the Rockefellers, you know, Rockefeller Plaza, or Carnegie Mellon University or Institute or whatever. They put their names on all these buildings. Trump, good example, right? Trump, everything he builds has big Trump on it. He calls his lands by his own name. This is a prophecy of maybe our future president. Who knows? And they think it's going to last forever. Like Bud was telling us this morning, one good nuke to New York City and none of that stuff's going to last. Nevertheless, verse 12, "Nevertheless, man being in honor abideth not, he is like the beasts that perish." Yeah, they think their name is going to last forever, their wealth is going to last forever, and they're just like a beast. They're gone, and guess what? In another generation, nobody's going to remember him. Who was Steve Jobs? You think my grandkids are going to know who Steve Jobs was, if I have grandkids? Probably not. They're not going to know who he was. They're not going to care. One of the richest men that ever lived, and who cares? He's like a beast. He's just laying in the dirt, pushing daisies. The thing is, it's vain to leave it to others, because Solomon taught that they'll probably just squander it. Look in Ecclesiastes 2, 18 through 19. Now, I still say it's better to live frugally and to save up money and to, if nothing else, be able to take care of yourself in your latter end. And if you can, leave something to your kids or to posterity. That's a good thing, but it's still vain. Chances are it's probably might not turn out so well, but it's I think it's still better to do that than not, of course. Ecclesiastes 2, 18 through 19 and 21. Solomon said, "Yea, I hated all my labor which I had taken under the sun, because I should leave it unto the man that shall be after me. And who knoweth whether he shall be a wise man or a fool? Yet shall he have rule over all my labor wherein I have labored, and wherein I have showed myself wise under the sun. This is also vanity." Now Solomon says, who knows whether this guy that I leave it to is going to be a wise man or a fool? Now, probability is he's going to be a fool. Because as, what was his name?
George Carlin.
George Carlin, thank you, you know exactly where I'm going. As George Carlin said, imagine how stupid the average person is. And then realize that half of them are stupider than that. And that is true, you think about it. So anyway, chances are he's going to be a fool, because that's we are all born into this world as fools. And it's up to us to become less foolish as we go along. But the default position is a fool.
That's right.
And the kids, chances are, you're going to leave, a lot of people leave it to their kids. If they were raised with a silver spoon and they were raised in affluence, chances are they're not going to appreciate it like you did. They didn't have to work for it like you did. And how many times have we seen that? When people leave their fortunes to their kids and their kids blow it all and it's all gone. This is what Solomon's saying. Nothing new under the sun. This was 3,000 years ago, and it's just the same today. The fools that lived in the olden times are just the same today. I can make another line to that hymn. Be a little bit different context, but anyway. Verse 21. For there is a man whose labor is in wisdom, and in knowledge, and in equity, yet to a man that hath not labored therein, shall he leave it for his portion? This also is vanity and a great evil. So you're wise, you labor in wisdom and in knowledge, you've not only amassed a lot of wealth, but you're a smart guy, you've lived wisely, you've done well, and then you leave it to some other guy that didn't labor in any of that stuff. That I just saw a special on yachts, and I mean, these great, big, huge things, maybe not hundreds, but anyway, dozens of millions of dollar yachts, and all these rich guys, they all want to have bigger than the next guy. And they literally sail by in their yacht and say, mine's bigger. Like literally, I mean, these people are childish, some of them. But anyway, where was I going with that? Their yachts. Oh, but they were saying that the caliber of the billionaires of today is very different than the caliber of the billionaires of a couple of generations ago. The billionaires of a couple generations ago were educated. They appreciated art and music and the finer things in life. And the billionaires today are just a bunch of retards, basically, and they've got into money somehow. Who knows? You know, gambling in the stock market or something. I don't know. But anyway, that's what this show was saying. But it remains to be seen for me whether I will leave an inheritance to my children or not. It just depends. I believe in performance-based inheritance. And if I had, say, four kids, and two of them were good, godly, baptized church members, moral Christians, and two of them were not baptized, not Christians, out there living like heathens and shacking up with their girlfriends or whatever, sodomites, God forbid, or something like that, you think I'm going to leave one penny to those other two? No way. No way. I do not believe in equal portions for all kids. I don't believe in that at all. Why would you? Why would you reward a disobedient, rebellious, ungodly child? I wouldn't. Now, you can do whatever you want with your own money, but I certainly wouldn't. I'd find somebody that's worthy of it. It wouldn't even matter if they're family to me. And, you know, you got that proverb which says the wealth of the sinner is laid up for the just. So someday I'll warn my kids, you turn out like idiots, no inheritance for you. Your wealth is going to be laid up for your siblings. Hopefully that doesn't happen. Now God will judge those who lay up treasure for themselves and are not rich toward God. Look in Luke 12. I guess that'd be a good incentive to have your kids behave themselves. If you tell them, right off the bat when they're young, hey, your inheritance is at stake here, so you better end up being good kids or not. And they'll all compete with each other. You know, competition's a great thing. Luke 12:16-21. And he spake a parable unto them, saying, the ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, what shall I do, because I have no room where to bestow my fruits? And he said, this will I do. I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there will I bestow all my fruits and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. Wasn't this guy just so smart? He just thinks he's really got it all figured out. I've got so much stuff. What am I going to do with all this stuff? I know. I'll build bigger barns. I'll pull down those old ones. And I'm going to fill it up. And I'm going to sit back, eat, drink, and be merry. I've got my whole emergency food supply for the rest of my life. And I've got nothing to worry about. And I certainly don't need to worry about God, because after all, what more do I need? I've got everything that I need right here. Who is the Lord, right? Isn't that what Solomon said in Proverbs 30? Or I guess it was Agur, the son of Jakeh. But anyway, he said, remember, give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with that which is convenient for me, lest I be poor and steal and take the name of my God in vain, or lest I be rich, or lest I be, how does he say it? Lest I be full and say, who is the Lord? Remember that passage in Proverbs 30? When we're rich, we forget who the Lord is. This is what this guy, he forgot who the Lord was, if he ever knew him. Verse 20, but God said unto him, thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Then whose shall those things be which thou hast provided? So is he that layeth up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. You see, it's a vain thing to lay up treasure for yourself and not be rich toward God. How sad it is. Jesus says it's more blessed to give than to receive. How sad is it the person that hoards it all for themselves and doesn't help out those who are in need? Matthew Henry said that wealth is like manure. It doesn't help if you don't spread it around, right? Or it's useless if you don't spread it around. I'm not a socialist. I'm for voluntary distribution of wealth, helping out people that need it and giving to the Lord and so on. I had a thought. I hate it. I should have said it whenever I had the thought. Oh, that's what it was. I came across this thing and I thought I would share it with you, and it just sort of came to mind. Have you ever thought about giving to charity to help poor people, or you know, people in foreign countries or something like that? You see these people that are in horrible shape, but then you wonder, if I give, is all the money just going to go to the CEO of the nonprofit, or is it all just going to be sucked up in administration costs, or does it get to the people at all? I always wonder about that too. Well, there's this guy, I forget his name, I can tell you his name later. He created this app called DonorSee, DonorSee. And what you can do is there are these missionaries or aid workers, or mainly missionaries, I think, out in the field in these really poor countries, and they come across somebody that has a need out there. Let's say this person is homeless and they need a house in Botswana or wherever. You can build them a house for $800 or something. It doesn't cost hardly anything. So what they'll do is they can use this app. They can post the need. They'll post a picture of the person and say what the need is, how much money is needed. And then people can go on this app and you can look at them and you can read down through and you can find out. I mean, one I saw in there, poor kid needed, he had a toothache so bad he couldn't go to school. He had rotten teeth. And he needed to be taken to the dentist in another town. And it would cost like $8 or something like that to have this tooth fixed. And he's in horrible pain. So anyway, they'll post stuff like this. Post a picture of the kid, show you a picture of his tooth. You can donate to it, and then whenever the need is met, then you get a notification on the app, and it shows you the need's met. Here's a picture of the kid. He's at the dentist. He got his tooth fixed. Here's a picture of this little house that we built this person. And you can actually see in real time your money going to this need. I thought it was a really neat idea. And the overhead cost is only, I think they take 4%. And the financial company, kind of like a PayPal type of thing, but it's not PayPal, I forget the name of it. Anyway, that company takes 3 point some percent for the financial transaction, and then the charity takes 4%. So really, 7-8%, and that's it. And the rest of the money goes directly to that person. And anyway, I thought it was a really neat, noble thing. Heard about it on the Tom Woods Show. I'll tell you, you can learn all kinds of stuff on the Tom Woods Show. But anyway, let's get back to this. I did want to share that with you, though. I'm glad I remembered. So here's the problem. The person that wants to be rich, the person whose life goal it is to be rich, he will cut corners. He will end up destroying himself. He will not be innocent if his desire and goal is to be rich. If you look in 1 Timothy 6 and verse 9, Paul says in 1 Timothy 6 and verse 9, he says, "But they that will be rich," in other words, they that want to be, that desire to be rich, "but they that will be rich fall into temptation and a snare and into many foolish and hurtful lusts which drown men in destruction and perdition." He that hasteth to be rich shall not be innocent. I forget where that verse is. But if you're going to do that, if your goal is to be rich, you'll do whatever you have to become rich. Whether that means stepping on the other people on the rungs of the ladder that are below you, or lying or cheating, or whatever you have to do, you will cheat to get there, chances are. That's what the Bible tells us. This is why God tells us not to labor to be rich. Look in Proverbs 23 and verse 4. This kind of thing is a waste of your life. There's nothing wrong with being rich. Don't get me wrong. Abraham was rich. David was rich. Solomon was rich. There are many people in the Bible, good and godly people, who were wealthy. There's nothing wrong with being wealthy. In 1 Timothy 6, in that very chapter that we just read, Paul tells Timothy to charge them that are rich in this world that they be rich in good works, ready to distribute, willing to communicate. He doesn't say, charge them that are rich in this world, that you guys are wicked, evil sinners. How dare you have money, and you better get rid of it all because it's wrong to have money. He doesn't say that. Because, as Paul tells us in another place, if we provide not for our own, we're worse than an infidel. So if the thing to do to be godly was to take a vow of poverty like some of these Catholic monks take and divest yourself of everything that you own, how are you going to take care of yourself? How are you going to take care of your family? How are you going to give to the Lord? How are you going to take care of the poor? You can't do it. There's nothing wrong with being rich. But having that to be your desire in life, that's a problem. Think of Solomon. What was Solomon's desire when the Lord said, "Ask me whatever you want, anything"? He didn't ask for riches. He didn't ask for the life of his enemies. He asked for wisdom, right? And God gave him wisdom and riches, and honor. God gave him all that in abundance. So if you seek first the kingdom of God, he'll take care of your needs. He may even make you rich, if you could handle it. Most of us can't. That's why God doesn't allow us to be rich, because we'd be idiots with it. Proverbs 23 and verse 4. Labor not to be rich. Cease from thine own wisdom. And remember what Jesus said. What does it profit a man if he should gain the whole world and lose his own soul? That would be the ultimate of wasting your life. You worked and gained the whole world. You became the wealthiest person ever. You owned it all. And in doing so, you lost your own soul. What a waste of your life. Look at Mark 8 and verse 36. The most important things in life are not things. Now, I'm not saying that money cannot buy happiness. People say money can't buy happiness. I don't believe that. If you're the poor kid with the toothache and you need $8 to have the tooth pulled, that $8 made you pretty happy, I'll bet. If you're the guy that's living in South Florida in the middle of the summertime and you're in sweltering heat and you can spend $30 a month and get air conditioning, $30 a month made you pretty happy. So you can't say that money doesn't buy happiness. To an extent, it does. But it doesn't buy love, it doesn't buy true relationships, it doesn't buy, you know, heaven, it doesn't buy knowledge of God or anything like that. It doesn't buy things that are more important, but it certainly buys some lesser things that do bring some happiness. There's no doubt about it. Mark chapter 8 and verse 36. Jesus said, "For what shall it profit a man if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? Remember yesterday, last week, whenever I defined the terms of wasting and profiting, we saw that to waste and profit are opposites, they're antonyms, right? Jesus said, what shall it profit a man? In other words, what he's saying is if you gain the whole world and lose your own soul, it's not profitable, right? It is unprofitable. And if it is unprofitable, that means it's a waste. So therefore, I don't know if I really had to prove this to you with primary definitions, but if you gain the whole world and lose your own soul, you have wasted your life. If your goal is to be rich, you are wasting your life. All right, the fourth thing that we can do to waste our lives is to work too much. You know, it's been said, this is certainly not anything that is a unique thought to me, but we've all heard it said that I've never heard a person on their deathbed say, I wish I'd have spent more time at the office, right? We've never heard that, right? Nobody ever says that. Can you imagine how, if I would feel bad for where that guy is going if his dying thought was, oh, I wish I got that project done at work. For goodness sakes, there's probably more things that are important, more important than that. But anyway, we've never seen that. Most gravestones that I've ever seen, I've looked at a few of them in my day, I've never seen the inscription, boy, I wish I could have been at the office more. Doesn't happen. Working too much is wasting your life. The Bible tells us in Psalm 127, in verse 2, that it is vain to rise up early and to sit up late and to eat the bread of sorrows. Psalm 127 and verse 2. It says, it is vain for you to rise up early, to sit up late, to eat the bread of sorrows, for he giveth his beloved sleep. If you are working so much that you are getting up really early and burning the midnight oil, you are wasting your life. Now, believe me, I'm preaching to myself here because I like to work and I do a fair amount of work myself. And sometimes it's hard to turn your mind off. My dear wife gets irritated with me because she can see me when I'm sitting at the dinner table and I'm zoned out and I'm clearly not. She's like, are you thinking about work again? Yeah. It's hard sometimes. It's hard to do it. But it's a waste of your life to burn up all your time working. It's vain to work too much and deprive your soul of good. Look at Ecclesiastes 4 and verse 8. Ecclesiastes 4 and verse 8. If anybody knew about this, it was Solomon. He was a hard worker and he was a hard taskmaster as well for the people. He accomplished a lot in his days, as we read in the book of Ecclesiastes. And he observes here a person, I don't know if this is a real person or just a hypothetical person, but this guy here that just labors his whole life and doesn't enjoy any good in his labor at all, and he sees that this is vanity. Ecclesiastes 4 and verse 8. He says, there is one alone, and there is not a second. Yea, he hath neither child nor brother. Yet is there no end to all his labor. Neither is his eye satisfied with riches, neither saith he, for whom do I labor, and bereave my soul of good? This is also vanity, yea, it is a sore travail. It's vanity and a sore travail. You know, travail describes a woman when she's giving birth, right? She's travailing in pain, right? Well, it's a painful thing to see a guy, the miser, right? The stereotypical miser, the guy that lives in a trailer, you know, and saves every penny. And whenever he dies someday and you go through the trailer and he's got, you know, $750,000 of gold coins stashed away in a safe somewhere or something. That actually happens. I read about a guy that, you know, he was so worried about the collapse or whatever that he'd put every penny into it and then he died and there's all this gold sitting there. But, you know, how sad is that? This guy, he's got neither child nor brother. I mean, it's too expensive to have kids, right? It is expensive to have kids, right? This guy didn't even want to have kids. He wanted to save up all his money and just work his whole life. He doesn't enjoy any good in his labor. That is vanity. Wives are expensive too, but they're worth it, right? Aren't they? Wives are expensive. Oh, don't shrug your shoulders like you don't know. Come on. Kids are expensive, but those are Hey, there's things that are way more important than money, that's for sure. The thing is, you can work constantly and really have nothing to show for it, nothing of true value. You can have a lot of money or a lot of stuff, nice house, nice cars, whatever, but you won't have anything of true value. Look at Proverbs 13 and verse 7. Proverbs 13 and verse 7. Solomon says, "There is that maketh himself rich, yet hath nothing. There is that maketh himself poor, yet hath great riches." Think about the guy who could have been single his whole life and made a bunch of money and made himself rich, and yet he's got nothing, and he dies childless. He's got no wife. He's got no kids. He's got no grandkids. He doesn't have many friends. I mean, think about that. But then think about the same guy that decides, you know, I'm going to get married, and I want to have 8 kids. And then his kids, they have a bunch of kids. And you got this huge family. What a wonderful time that would be. And you made yourself poor, but you've got great riches, you know? I think about that going into the ministry. I could have continued on in my path and made more money than I make now, but you know what? And I'm not poor. I'm not saying I'm poor, but I would have less probably than I do have less than I would have had then, but yet I have great riches because there's more important things than money and stuff. Paul said, "Is poor yet making many rich." Talking about pastors. Think about all the people that have destroyed their marriages and lost their kids over trying to get better off, working too much. How many husbands, specifically, how many husbands are driven to get more and more, and sometimes nobly? They want to get the big house for their families, or they want to get all this stuff for their kids and the vacations or whatever. They want to provide the good life for their family, for their wife, for their children. And the sad, perverse thing is they end up losing the very thing that they were trying to provide for. The wife leaves him. The kids can't stand him. They don't even know who he is because they never see him. He's at the office all the time. That happens all the time. That's not an uncommon thing. Just don't let it happen to you. There are more important things than being at the office and kissing the boss's butt all the time and trying to be the best employee or whatever. Yeah, be the best employee you can be, but don't do it at the expense of your family. Just a good little maxim is we ought to work to live, not live to work. Work to live, not live to work. We ought to enjoy the fruit of our labor in moderation, Solomon told us. Look in Ecclesiastes 2 and verse 24. Ecclesiastes 2:24. The best thing that you can give your children is your time. I've read this in numerous books on parenting and marriage and things like that, and they all say the same thing. The best thing that you can give your wife, that you can give your children, is your time. And it's interesting, when you talk to, just think about this, and I read this, what was this, Bringing Up Girls, I think, James Dobson's book. I thought this was so true. He said, whenever you ask kids after they've grown up, ask them what their fondest memories were in their childhood. And I guarantee you, it's not going to be, oh, that awesome car my dad had, you know, or whatever, the great big house, or whatever, all the awesome toys, the Xboxes or whatever. I guarantee you it's not going to be that. They're going to remember the time when dad sat down and played with me, the time when mom, you know, put together a puzzle with me or whatever. It's going to be little things like that. It's going to be the Thanksgiving dinners at home, or it's going to be whatever, the special birthday parties we had or something. It's going to be things like that. It's not going to be things. It's going to be the experiences and the time that they spent with you. I guarantee it. Ecclesiastes 2 and verse 24. That's why I cite reference books for you, because I'm not speaking from personal experience, so I want to at least tell you what other wise people that have been there have said, because you know, you might not believe me if I'm just saying it, so I try to cite references for you anyway. Ecclesiastes 2 and verse 24. There is nothing better for a man than that he should eat and drink, and that he should make his soul enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw, that it was from the hand of God. Nothing better that a person should eat and drink and enjoy the good of his labor. It's good to save, it's good to be frugal, but you don't want to save everything. You don't want to deny yourself every pleasure. What's the point? So you can leave it to your kids that are going to blow it all and they're going to enjoy it all? You might as well enjoy a little bit of it anyway. I remember my poor grandma, she'd save every penny. It's ridiculous. She always thought it'd be neat to go on a cruise, but we couldn't spend the money to go on a cruise. She wants to leave it to the kids, you know, especially to her one son, which doesn't deserve a dang penny of it. But anyway, that's beside the point. And it won't even go to McDonald's on the way home from the drugstore because she wants to save the money for her kids. That is vain. I loved my grandma. She's not around anymore. But still, that is vain. So if you work too much, you're wasting your life. Number 5, taking too much leisure time and being lazy. So you see, we're trying to find the middle road here, because if you work too much and try to get rich, you're wasting your life. But if you take too much leisure time and you're lazy, you're not working enough, you're wasting your life. So somewhere in the middle is where you're not wasting your life. That's where we have to try to find. We have to let our moderation be known unto all men, for the Lord is at hand, Paul tells us in the book of Philippians, chapter 4, I believe it is. So if we take too much leisure time and be lazy, we are wasting our lives. The thing is, God has made us stewards over our own lives and over the talents that He's given us. And He expects us to do wisely with the talents and the things or whatever He's given us. Look in Matthew 25 and verse 24. This is that parable of the talents. Now, it's a really neat play on words, I think, back there in the Bible, because in the days whenever the New Testament was written, talents were a measure of money, right? It was a big sum, a weight of gold or silver, I think, as well. So you kind of have the play on words here, and I don't know if this was intended, you know, back when the Bible was written or not, and when the King James translated it, I don't know. But it certainly is interesting that we have talents as money that were given to them, and they were to invest and make more with. But then you also have, of course, talents as we think of it today, as in skills and, you know, things that are given to us, that things that we have abilities to do. So I think it's a very interesting play on words here anyway, if that wasn't the original intent. But look at Matthew 25, 24 through 30. It says, "Then he which had received the one talent came and said, Lord, I knew thee, that thou art an hard man, reaping where thou hast not sown, and gathering where thou hast not sucked, where thou hast not strawed. And I was afraid, and went and hid thy talent in the earth. Lo, thou hast that is thine." Now, the background of this is the Lord gives the talents out. And He gives one guy 5 talents. He gives one guy 2 talents. He gives the other guy, this guy that we're reading about, 1 talent. And as the parable went on to say, the guy that had the 5 talents went and traded and he made 5 more talents, 100% on his investment. Gave it back to the master. The master was happy. He said, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant." The guy with the 2 talents did well with his 2 talents. He got 2 more talents, 100% investment. "Well done, thou good and faithful servant." The guy with the 1 talent takes his talent and hides it in the earth because he's afraid of the boss. You're a hard man, you know, you reap where you haven't strawn, and so on. And maybe he's afraid to lose it. Maybe he's afraid, you know, if I go trade with it, maybe something will happen, I'll lose the talent, and the boss is going to be really mad with me, so I'm just going to hide it in the earth. I'm not going to do anything with this talent, and I'm just going to give it back to him. Well, the boss was not happy with this. Look at what he says. Look at what the boss says to him in verse 26. "His Lord answered and said unto him, Thou wicked and slothful servant, thou knewest that I reap where I have not sowed, or where I sowed not, and gather where I have strawed, where I have not strawed. Thou oughtest therefore to have put my money to the exchangers, that is, to the bank, and then at my coming I should have received mine own with usury. Take therefore the talent from him, and give it unto him which hath 10 talents. For unto every one that hath shall be given, and he shall have abundance. But from him that hath not shall be taken away even that which he hath." So, to the surprise of this slothful servant, He hides it in the earth and gives it back to the master. And the master says, you wicked and slothful servant. See, the master was a wise guy. He could cut through all the garbage and find out what the key issue was. The real issue was not that this guy was afraid. It's that he was lazy. Thou wicked and slothful servant, he says. You ought to at least put the money in the bank. If you were worried about losing it, you could have at least got me some interest, some usury. And then what happens? The talent gets taken from him and given to the guy with the 10 talents. In the other similar parable in Luke, he gives it to the guy with the 10 talents, and they say, but Lord, he's already got 10 talents. He's like, it doesn't matter. To him much is given, but the Lord will commit the more to him. So if you don't use the little talent that you have, God will take it away, give it to somebody else. Verse 30, and cast ye, and look at this word, cast ye the unprofitable servant into outer darkness. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. So if we are unprofitable, if we are not using our talents, our time, our money, our abilities, if we're not using them to the best of our ability, God calls us unprofitable. And what does that mean? It means we are wasting our lives. Remember, profitable means yielding profit or advantage, beneficial, useful, serviceable, fruitful, or valuable. So someone who is unprofitable is wasting their life. Now we're told in Romans 12 and verse 11 that we are supposed to be diligent, not slothful in business. Look at Romans 12 and verse 11. Paul says, not slothful in business, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. Slothful means lazy. You ever see a sloth? You ever go to the zoo and see a sloth? They just lay around for about 23 and a half hours a day and do absolutely nothing. Kind of like a lot of people in this country and in Europe. They lay around all day and do absolutely nothing. I don't know who, which came first, the sloth describing the lazy person or the sloth as the name of the animal, but anyway, they are both applicable. Not slothful in business, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. What did Paul tell us? And I'll quote the verse here in just a minute. But whatsoever you do, do it as unto the Lord and not unto men. Whatever we do, do it as if Jesus Christ is right there watching you, as if he told you, hey, dig that ditch. Or if Jesus Christ is there and he said, dig that ditch, I'll bet you you're going to dig that ditch as fast as you can, as hard as you can. And you're going to come back and say, yes, Lord, what do you want me to do next? Well, when your boss tells you to dig that ditch, it's the same thing. Do it as unto the Lord and not unto men. And guess what? If your boss tells you to dig that ditch and you do the best job digging that ditch he's ever seen, you're not going to be digging that ditch for very long. You're going to be running the backhoe or something. You're going to be doing something else. He's going to be, and pretty soon you're going to be managing the other guys that are digging the ditches or whatever. You're not going to be doing that for long. Solomon told us in Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 10 that whatever we do, do it with all our strength, all our might. Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 10. He says, whatsoever thy hand find to do, do it with thy might, for there is no work, nor device, nor knowledge, nor wisdom in the grave whither thou goest. You see, there's coming a time when you're not going to be able to work anymore. Solomon describes it in chapter 12 as the evil days. When you go to the grave, your work is definitely done on this earth anyway. So while you're here and while you can work, whatever you do, do it with all thy might. Work hard. But, as I just got done telling you, don't work too much, though. Remember, moderation. Work hard. So here's the thing. When you're working, work hard. When it's time to stop working, then take a break and relax and spend time with the family. But when you're working, work hard. And then if you do that, you don't have to work as long, because when you work more efficiently and you get more done in a shorter period of time, then you don't have to work as long. I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but sometimes you need reminded of the most simple things that you already do know, right? Turn with me to Colossians 3 and verse 23. I'll give you the verse that I mentioned earlier about doing things to the Lord and not to men. This is a good thing to remember. Colossians 3 and verse 23. He says, "And whatsoever you do, do it heartily, as to the Lord and not unto men." What did the Lord tell us? To love the Lord our God with all our heart, all of our strength, all of our mind. Whatsoever you do, do it heartily, as to the Lord and not unto men. And then Paul likewise said in Ephesians 6, verses 7 through 8, that we ought to do things as not as men pleasers, but serving God. Ephesians 6, 7 through 8. He says, "With goodwill, doing service as to the Lord and not to men, knowing that whatsoever good thing any man doeth, the same shall he receive of the Lord, whether he be bond or free." So there's a reward that goes along with this. If you do your work as to the Lord and not to men, you will receive a reward from the Lord. You'll get a raise in your paycheck too from men, but you'll receive a reward of the Lord. And even if it doesn't come in this life as a monetary reward, you get rewarded in the next life. Remember what Jesus said in that parable, "Be thou ruler over 5 cities. Be thou ruler over 10 cities. There were eternal rewards that are attached to the things that we do down here. You don't want to forget that. The Apostle John told us that of a man here that he was commending that whatever he did it faithfully. 3 John 1 and verse 5. We don't make it over to 3 John very often. There is some good stuff in there, but for whatever reason, it just kind of gets lost between 1 John and Revelation or Jude. I don't know why. 3 John 1 and verse 5. John said, "Beloved," he's talking here to the well-beloved Gaius. He says, "Beloved, thou doest faithfully whatsoever thou doest to the brethren and to strangers." Let me tell you what, if a man of God wrote me a letter and he said that "Thou doest faithfully whatsoever thou doest to the brethren and to strangers," I'd be pretty happy. I thought, wow, I'm doing all right, because that's a pretty good commendation. If whatever you do it faithfully. Now, every man, every able man, should have a job to provide for himself and for his family. And if a man doesn't provide for himself and for his own, well, he's in big trouble with God. Let's look first of all in 2 Thessalonians 3 and verse 10. As Paul taught this old principle that if you don't work, you don't eat. Now that principle has been broken in this country by a thing called welfare and food stamps. And if you don't work, you still eat. But if we had that principle here again and there was no social safety net, then if you didn't work, you didn't eat, or your family took care of you, and they'd get pretty tired of you not working in a pretty short amount of time. They would take care of that. But the government, rather than wanting to get people off of welfare, they want to get more people on welfare. Because they don't care. It doesn't matter. They have unlimited budgets. They can always tax more. They can always borrow more. And the more people they get on the dole, the more voters they have, right? Who's going to vote against the guy that's giving them the handout? Nobody is. You see, if a private charity continued to get more and more people that are taking from the charity, it would go out of business and nobody give it to it anymore, because they'd think, now wait a minute, you haven't solved any of the problems you've been trying to solve. All you've done is add more people to the rolls. But if the government adds more people to the rolls, what happens? Do they go out of business? No, we give them more money. It's perverse. It's just the opposite of the way that the free market would work. The free market would work if you have a charity and you're trying to help out the poor and get them on their feet. The idea is to get them off the program as soon as possible, not keep them on the program. That's why charity should be done on a local level, in an individual level, and it should not be done on a government level, because the government has perverse incentives and they don't do anything that they do efficiently anyway. You ever been to the post office? Anyway, that's another soapbox. But if you don't work, you shouldn't eat. 2 Thessalonians 3 and verse 10. Paul said, "For even when we were with you, this we commanded you, that if any would not work, that means he won't do it. Like he could, but he just won't do it. There's something, he just doesn't feel like it. If any would not work, neither should he eat. It does not say if any cannot work, neither should he eat. There are people that can't work. Take a quadriplegic. There's not much he can do to work. Even he could do something. He could be a greeter at Walmart or something. Pretty much almost anybody can do something. But if a person cannot work, that's one thing. But if a person will not work, that's a horse of another color. Look at Proverbs 19 and verse 15. Proverbs 19 and verse 15. If you're not working when you could work, you're wasting your life. And if you're on welfare food stamps, you're wasting a bunch of taxpayers' money. 2 Thessalonians 3, or no, no, Proverbs. Proverbs 19 and verse 15. It says, slothfulness or laziness, slothfulness casteth into a deep sleep, and an idle soul shall suffer hunger. An idle soul, somebody that's not doing anything, will be hungry. Or at least that's the way it used to work before the days of government welfare and things like that. An idle soul shall suffer hunger. That's a darn good incentive to get out there and get a job if you're hungry. I don't think most people would starve to death rather than work if that was the choice. Now, if you don't provide for your own, especially they for of your own household, your own family, then the Bible says that you're worse than an infidel. Look at 1 Timothy 5 and verse 8. Worse than an infidel. An infidel is an unbeliever. So the person that doesn't provide for his own, and we're talking about financial provision here, providing for widows, which could even include somebody, you know, if a widow has nephews, it says in one place here. So I mean, we're talking about even extended family. You don't provide for your own, you're worse than an unbeliever. 1 Timothy 5 and verse 8. It says, but if any provide not for his own, and especially for those of his own house, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. So that's a serious thing. If you got a guy that has kids and he won't work and he won't provide for his own family, he's worse than an infidel. I don't care if he can quote me sovereign grace verses all day long. If you don't work, you're worse than an infidel if you can work. Now, to not work when you can work is to walk disorderly. Look at 2 Thessalonians 3 and verse 11. Now, this is an important point. I want you to hide this one back in the back of your mind, and I'm going to come back to it in just a minute. 2 Thessalonians 3 and verse 11. It says, for we hear that there are some which walk among you disorderly, working not at all, but are busybodies. So Paul says, here are these people that are not working at all. They are walking disorderly. Remember that, walking disorderly. I want you to remember that phrase, walking disorderly. If you're not working when you can, then you're walking disorderly. Now, if you're not working and you can be, well, then you need to be. Look at verse 12. Paul says, now them that are such, that are walking disorderly, not working at all. Now them that are such, we command and exhort by our Lord Jesus Christ that with quietness they work and eat their own bread. So, I don't get up here and command you to do things very often, but I got a verse right here. I command everybody under the sound of my voice, I don't care if you're hearing it on tape or you're here or whatever, everybody under the sound of my voice, that you should work and eat your own bread. That's what Paul said. That is a commandment of God. Now, there are like 49 million people out there in this country that need to hear that commandment. Now, if they're trying to get a job and they can't get one or something, well, hey, I mean, if you can't get one and you're legitimately trying and you take anything you can find and you can't get one, okay, well, that's another story. If you can't do it, you can't do it. But you keep trying. But if you can work and you just rather collect a check than work, you need to get a job. Now, if you've been out of work for a long time, then just take any job you can get. It doesn't matter what the job is. I mean, I can see if you've been out of work for, you know, a month or two or something, then it makes sense to not take the job at McDonald's or something whenever you're qualified for a $75,000 a year job or something, you've got a $2,000 mortgage. Well, you know, obviously it doesn't make any sense to take the job at McDonald's. Your time would be much better spent trying to look for another job you're more qualified for. But if you've been at a job for a long, out of a job for a long time, just take any job you can get. I don't care if it's sucking the crap out of Port-a-Johns. Take any job you can get. It doesn't matter what it is. And if you do that, then the Lord will bless you for doing that, and better things will come. You see, there's no honest job that is beneath any of us. Look at Proverbs 14:23. And I'm not disparaging the guy that's sucking the crap out of the Port-a-John, by the way. That's a fine job. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that job. Doesn't smell all that great, but it's a fine job. There's nothing wrong with it whatsoever. Proverbs 14, verse 23. Proverbs 14:23. It says, in all labor there is profit, but the talk of the lips tendeth only to penury or to poverty. Solomon says, in all labor there's profit. You can make money and not only profit. Remember we read the definition of profit, that it was to be serviceable, to be of value, of importance. In all labor, there is value. You can add value to your fellow man and add value in your account with God by whatever job you do. But the talk of the lips tendeth only to penury. If you just talk about working, talk about getting a job, you're going to be a poor man. You've got to do it, not just talk about it. Now, if there's something in a person's life that is prohibiting them from getting a job, then they need to fix that ASAP and then get on with the program. I mean, for instance, if you're sick to the point where you just can't even leave the house or something like that, well, go to a doctor, you know? If you got a problem where you just can't do it, I know a guy like that, nobody here, but I know a guy that has an illness that is stopping him from being able to work. And, you know, I'm like, go to the doctor, you know? What's going on? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. You're just going to sit at home and not go to a doctor and not get well. And the guy that I'm thinking about is a young guy, too. I mean, I'm not talking about some guy that's 70 years old or something. You need to get a job. Get yourself fixed, whatever your problem is. Get it fixed as soon as possible and get to work. The church must withdraw fellowship from the person who will not work when they can. Hear me out. Who will not work when they can. They're offered a job and they won't work. That's a problem. Look at 2 Thessalonians 3, 6, 11, and 14. 2 Thessalonians 3, 6, 11, and 14. Second Thessalonians 6, 11, and 14. Paul says, now we command you, brethren, in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that ye withdraw yourselves. He's talking to the church here in Thessalonica. We command you, brethren, in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that ye withdraw yourselves from every brother that walketh disorderly, and not after the tradition which he received of us. Withdraw yourself from every brother that walketh disorderly. Remember, I told you, pay particular attention to that phrase, walketh disorderly. The church is commanded by the Lord Jesus Christ to withdraw ourselves, separate company, separate fellowship, exclude this person who walks disorderly. This could be a whole host of things, walking disorderly. But let me show you, and especially in the context of this chapter, what one particular thing is of walking disorderly. Verse 11. For we hear that there are some which walk among you disorderly, not working at all, but are busybodies. There you got. Proof positive. The Bible says if a person will not work when they can, they are walking disorderly, and the church must separate company from them. Verse 14. And if any man obey not our word by this epistle, note that man and have no company with him, that he may be ashamed. Yet count him not as an enemy, but admonish him as a brother. So we don't count this guy as an enemy. The whole purpose of church discipline in general, whatever the problem is, the whole purpose of church discipline is not to count the guy as an enemy and put him out and say, get away from us, you swine. We don't ever want to see your face again. That's not the point. The point is we count him as a brother. We admonish him as a brother. The whole point of church discipline is to bring the erring brother back to the faith, to the truth. That's the purpose of it. So if you're not working when you could be, you are wasting your life. Now, it's not only just not working. That's an obvious one. You're wasting your life if you're not working, you're not doing anything. But also, if you're just doing the bare minimum to get by, that also makes you an unprofitable servant. Look at Luke 17, 7 through 10. See, the Lord Jesus doesn't just want his people to just do the bare minimum just to get by. He didn't want you to go to work and just punch the clock and do just enough so that your boss isn't breathing down your neck. He wants you to work hard. Whether you're at work, whether you're at home, whether you're in the ministry, or whatever your job is. If you're a stay-at-home mom, if you take care of the house, you take care of the kids, whatever you do, everything. The Lord wants us to work hard and do the best we can, not just do the bare minimum. Luke 17, 7 through 10. Jesus said, but which of you, having a servant, plowing or feeding cattle, will say unto him by and by, when he has come from the field, go and sit down to meat? And will not rather say unto him, make ready wherewith I may sup, and gird thyself, and serve me, till I have eaten and drunken, and afterwards thou shalt eat and drink? I mean, if you got a servant, and he's been out there in the field, this is how it works. You don't come in and tell your servant, hey, sit down, let me get you something to eat. No, the servant comes in, you say, okay, feed me, and then you can get something to eat. I mean, that may sound really horrible in today's day and age, but that's the way it is. That's the way it was back then. If you have servants nowadays, that's how it works. Nothing wrong with it. It's just the way it is. Verse 9. Doth he thank that servant because he did the things that were commanded him? I trow not. I think not. The servant comes in from the field. He's been working all day. You've presumably been working too, doing something. And you tell the guy, hey, get me some dinner, and then you can eat yourself. And the guy, after he's tired working in the field all day, gets you some dinner. And do you thank him and say, wow, thanks so much for getting me dinner? Jesus says, no. Why? The guy just did his job. I mean, when you go to work, do you expect your boss to thank you for every little thing you do? No, of course not. When your children obey you, do you thank them for obeying you? You shouldn't. You shouldn't. They don't need thanked for obeying you. They should obey you. That's what they're supposed to do. Now, if they did something above and beyond what they're supposed to do, then, yeah, if they went and cleaned the bathroom voluntarily or something, well, yeah, thank them for it. But when you tell them to do whatever they're supposed to do, they don't need thanked for that. Well, that sounds hard. Well, it's what Jesus said. It's not what I said. How far was I going to read? Where am I at in the outline? I was going to go to verse 10. Verse 10, so likewise ye, when ye shall have done all those things which are commanded you, say, we are unprofitable servants, for we have done that which was our duty to do. When you've done exactly what was told you to be done, you can say, okay, I'm unprofitable because I've simply done exactly what I was told to do. You don't need thanked for doing what you're supposed to do. If somebody does above and beyond, well, you thank them. Somebody invites you over to dinner, well, of course, thank them. They don't have to invite you over to dinner. That's why every time I eat at you guys' house, I always try to remember to thank you. Because even though you've been doing it forever, you don't have to, and I'm still thankful for it. I thank my wife for cooking for me too. I don't know. Maybe I'm a hypocrite. Maybe I shouldn't thank her according to Jesus, but I thank her anyway. So I don't know. But anyway, there you go. In all things, give thanks. What can we do? The contradiction in the Bible. All right. Anyway. In other words, doing the bare minimum is wasting your life. Now, sleeping too much is wasting your life. Look at Proverbs 24, verses 30 through 34. Proverbs 24, 30 through 34. I went by the field of the slothful, and by the vineyard of the man void of understanding. And lo, it was all grown over with thorns, and nettles had covered the face thereof, and the stone wall thereof was broken down. Then I saw and considered it well. I looked upon it, received instruction. Here's what he figures out. He goes by the guy's house, and everything's falling apart. The stone wall is broken down. There's thorns growing up all through the garden. The siding's falling off the house. The shingles are missing. The place is a complete disaster. And he looks on it and he says, ah, I've learned something. I know what the problem is here. Verse 33, yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep, so shall thy poverty come as one that traveleth, and thy want as an armed man. Yeah, just keep sleeping, and your poverty is going to come. It's going to come as one that traveleth. You don't know exactly when it's going to show up, just like one that traveleth, but one of these days, it's going to show up, and it's going to come as an armed man. It's going to come with a lot of force and a lot of power, and there's nothing you're going to be able to do. Just keep sleeping, and you'll be on the street someday. That's what Solomon's saying. Look at Proverbs 6, 9 through 11. Proverbs 6, 9 through 11. Now, of course, some people need more sleep than others. The point is, you got to figure out how much sleep you as an individual need, and then you get that amount of sleep, but don't get 3 hours more than that amount of sleep, right? Some people can go on 4 hours, some people need 10. You just figure out how much you need and get that amount of sleep and then get up and get something done. Proverbs 6, 9 through 11. It says, how long wilt thou sleep, O sluggard? When wilt thou arise out of thy sleep? Yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep, so shall thy poverty come as one that traveleth in thy want as an armed man. This apparently was important to Solomon because he said it twice now in the Proverbs. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding to the hands. Your poverty is coming. Proverbs 20 and verse 3. Proverbs 20 and verse 13, pardon me. Solomon says, love not sleep, lest thou come to poverty. Open thine eyes, and thou shalt be satisfied with bread. I'd say the first step in being successful materially in this life is to get out of bed. What did Benjamin Franklin say? The mason and the evil man that he was, what did he say? Early to bed, early to rise, makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise. A lot of wisdom in that, isn't there? Look at Proverbs 26 and verse 14. Proverbs 26 and verse 14. It says, as the door turneth upon his hinges, so doth the slothful upon his bed. You ever do that before? You ever just feel just lazy and you just keep hitting the snooze button and you roll over and you sleep again and then you finally just shut the alarm off entirely and you just wait. It seems like about every 10 minutes you kind of wake up and you're just like, oh, I'm tired. And you just fall back asleep and just roll back and forth. You ever been there? It's a miserable feeling. Some people spend half their lives doing that. It's a horrible thing. Idleness will bring you to poverty and it's a waste of your life. Look at Proverbs 19 and verse 15. Proverbs 19:15. I'll tell you what you do if you have a hard time getting up. Get yourself a nice loud alarm clock like I have and then put it on the opposite side of the bedroom and the pain of hearing that loud bang, bang, bang just drives you crazy is greater than your love of sleep and you'll get up to turn the thing off and then once you've finally gotten up, you get enough sense in you which says I'm not going to lay back down again. That's what I do. Put the thing on the other side of the room. Because I love being up early in the morning, but I hate getting up early in the morning. It's hard for whatever reason. It's just, but the alarm on the other side of the room, it really helps out. Proverbs 19 and verse 15 says, "Slothfulness casteth into a deep sleep, and an idle soul shall suffer hunger." And we're going to give an account for every idle word that we spoke in this life. Look at Matthew 12 and verse 36. Every idle word. How much more so if we just laid around and didn't do anything our whole lives? Matthew chapter 12 and verse 36. The Lord said, "But I say unto you that every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give account thereof in the day of judgment." That's something to think about. Every idle word, every word that you spoke that was unnecessary to be spoken, the Lord says we're going to give an account for it in the day of judgment. That's a frightening thought. So if you take too much leisure time, you're wasting your life. And if you're lazy, you're wasting your life. I'm going to check the time here. I want to see. I don't know if I think we're going to call it quits for now. I had one more section to get through, but I don't want to weary you too much, and we have communion coming up. So, Lord willing, we will pick up with this next time. Thank you for listening.